Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there's a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles.
Even the sun goes down, heroes eventually die. Horoscopes often lie and sometimes lie. Nothing is for sure, nothing is for certain. Nothing lasts forever but until they close the curtain. It's a Gemini, a Gemini.
I am headed back to the South, this time Oxford, Mississippi, to talk to co-owner of Bar Muse, a fellow named Joseph Stinchcombe. We're going to talk with Joe about his culinary travels and how it took him to the creative bartending that he's doing now. It's been recognized. He's been up for quite a few awards. We'll talk about that. And also how hip-hop rules the house at Bar Muse. Can't be anything any better in his bar, and he'll talk about his adventures in that realm too. So stay tuned, listen, meet Joe.
My name is Joseph Stinchcombe. Everyone calls me Joe. I'm the head bartender and co-owner of a bar in Oxford, Mississippi called Bar Muse.
Yeah, when I saw you were a bar owner, I was just like, excellent. Congratulations on that. I know what a trek it is to do that. And for a second, we talked about how you're a Lego, and I'm going to bring that up again right now, because the fact that you have become so successful that you made it into an official bartending Lego collection, but not official from Lego, just official through the cocktail world, I think is a pretty good achievement. But you had to have done a lot in order to become that Lego. So I would love to hear your story. Tell me, you worked in food, you worked in drink. Just tell me from the beginning, how did this happen?
It's funny because I don't think anyone ever decides they want to be a bartender, a career, you know, hospitality person. That's not something you think, you know, for career day, no one's like, I want to work in restaurants for the rest of my life.
Right.
so I went to, I attended school at University of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. When I got finished, I got a job as a debt collector. And that was the most soul crushing job you could ever imagine, just calling people about debt. And it's just sitting at a desk, things that I just don't really do well with. I got laid off. I was on unemployment at like 21, 22 years old. Mm-hmm. And just, it was just miserable. A friend of mine got me a job at a restaurant here in town as a dishwasher. He's like, get you as a dishwasher. I was like, man, I gotta get out of the house. This is just like, killing me.
Yeah. Sometimes getting laid off can be a good thing, right?
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
It leads you to something you didn't expect.
Exactly. That's what got me into restaurants. That was my first taste of restaurants, and I just absolutely fell in love with it. Just the pacing, just meeting people. Like, I just enjoy talking to people and meeting people. So just that fueled my desire to do more in restaurants. And work my way up from being a dishwasher to being a bartender and managing the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then in 2016, Emily Blunt asked me to be the beverage director of St. Leo, a restaurant that was about to open.
Emily Blunt, the actress?
And Emily Blunt, her name is Emily Blunt. And it's funny because she used to work. She was an actress as well. She was on
a different Broadway. Actress.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she asked me to run her beverage program. And I said yes. And then the 5 years I was there, we were nominated for 2 James Beards, one for Best New Restaurant, and then Outstanding Beverage Program in 2019.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal. I mean, some people are just like, oh, but you didn't win. I'm all, no, you absolutely won because you got nominated. You got this recognition that you wouldn't have expected, right? I mean, and yeah. Based on, in part, the restaurant and your cocktails. So now you yourself did have time in the kitchen too, not just washing dishes. You worked your way up and you did cooking as well, right?
Yes, I did cook. I cooked at Proud Larry's. I was on a fellowship through Blackberry Farm in 2020, right before the pandemic. I cooked at Blackberry Farm, Post Ranch Inn, French Laundry, Hotel Jerome in Aspen. I've done some culinary things.
Yeah, I saw that you did the French Laundry thing, and I lived in the Bay Area for a long time, and I was like, ooh, that's fancy. But I got to go to one of those after a staff meal after service at French mm-hmm. Laundry, because I had a friend who was working at one of their sister restaurants. And what an amazingly special vibe that was, you know, just hanging out there with everyone. So
absolutely.
All of this food experience, you know, were you doing that before you started bartending?
Yes. So I've always had a love for food. Mm-hmm. So I traveled a lot. My dad was in the Air Force, so we moved a lot for his job. Mm-hmm. And so that just always fueled my curiosity of just trying new flavors and different things and just wanting to know what other people ate. I think that's the quickest way to understand someone is what they eat and how they
understand
feed themselves.
Understand a culture, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. Understand a new city, a new culture, whatever is, go for the food. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how did this translate over into your becoming a bartender, though? I mean, what shifted you from food to cocktails?
I would go to restaurants and I would look at cocktail menus and I would think, what are these ingredients? What are they using to make drinks that I don't know about? What is the secret to these? What is Campari? What is Aperol? What are these things that I keep saying on these menus that I have no earthly idea what they are? They can't be that much better than me at this, right? Like, what are these ingredients? What are these things? And so I would just buy cocktail books and read about Campari and Aperol and Amari and whatever I could to learn more about it. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of fueled to, like, then obviously now as the craft cocktail scene has exploded, it's more of a culinary focus than it is just mixing a drink. Mm-hmm. It's about the experience and adding food. Food components to drinks. Mm-hmm. I'll just say, well, I love to turn things that I eat into things that I can drink. That's kind of how I view cocktails, is like, how can I turn this really cool dish into a beverage?
Yeah, no, actually, I tell people the same thing. Excuse me. I always say, like, when people are like, you love cocktails so much, but you're not so much into beer, you're not so much into wine. I mean, I think you're a wine person as well. I find cocktails to be just really interesting creations. You know, I look at them, I do the same. I love cooking too, but I'm not a professional like you, but I'll look at the ingredients and just be like, ooh, how did they do that? How does that work out? How is that mm-hmm. going to taste? And I find it so interesting. So for you seeing that in the cocktail side, you decide to get on the other side and you're like, mm-hmm. okay, no more cooking. I'm in the bar now crafting. So what was your first bartending gig like before you, or were you already learning these things and you're like, now is my time?
Oh no. So that's a funny story. When I first started bartending, I didn't know the difference between soda and tonic water. So people would order a gin tonic and I would just give them soda until my bar manager was like, what's that guy asking? I was like, he asked for a tonic, man. And I was like, I gave him soda. And my bar manager was like, dude, there's a difference. And I was like, I had no idea. For the first 6 months, I was giving people gin and sodas this entire time.
Did they complain about it, or did they not even notice?
No, they were just like, oh, okay, well, just a little flat. And I was like, oh, okay. But this, so it's like, it's funny, like, that's-
You blame it on the gun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I did what I was told, man. And I think that's a really good, like, that's what makes cocktails to me just so fun. Like,
yeah.
No matter how big you get, you still have those little humbling moments. Like, man, I didn't know between tonic and soda water, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's something you actually do have to learn. You know, it's like, there is a difference there. There's a difference between all of that. So when you were first bartending, then you had that. And then what was your trajectory like on the bartending side? You started off just humbly behind the bar.
Just making like your classic, your margaritas, your martinis, things like that. But the margaritas are like, you know, sour mix. So it's that neon.
Oh,
the
God.
Neon green color. Yeah, you know, like a chain restaurant would make for margaritas and things like that. And I just would always, I would also just like try to create things, and I'll read these cocktails and I'm like, I'm gonna try to make this at work, and it would be just terrible. Like, what if we put this together in that? And then, like, you know, experimenting and things.
Do you remember anything in particular that when you tried it, you were like, oh, this is really bad?
Oh, man. I have so many of those where I would try to make a cocktail and it wouldn't work out. I tried to do a whole amusement park themed drink menu. Uh-huh. So it was like cotton candy and like butter popcorn, things like that. And I kept trying to get the butter popcorn bourbon, and it would be trash every time I made it. And I had a case of like these. I used like Buffalo Trace, Maker's Mark, Four Roses. I was like, it must be the bourbon, not the method in which I'm doing this. So I had a case of just like these terrible butter popcorn, like butter popcorn bourbons that would, yeah. So I would just give them to people as gifts, like, oh, try this, man. I made this. And people were like, this isn't very good. I'm like, ah, but it's your gift now. I know.
Just add Coke.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's hilarious. Yeah, I remember the first time I learned about fat washing and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh my God, this is a game changer. But I was so afraid. I'm practicing at home. I'm all, what if this goes rancid on me? What did I do? What if I do something wrong? You know, those little mm-hmm. things. What if I burn it and not in a good way? You know, stuff yep. like that you have to learn. So when do you feel like, as you were, you know, progressing behind the bar, when did you feel like you started kind of coming into your own? What was the bar you were at that time?
It was definitely St. Leo. Yeah. Was trying to kind of came into my own. There was a conference called BevCon in 2017 that happened in Charleston. Mm-hmm. And I attended that. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm on the right track in terms of how I think about drinks and how I create drinks and like the overall fun that it is serving cocktails. Right. I think that's the part that we often kind of gets lost, is that it's actually just, it's fun. It, you know, it's a drink. It's not anything, like I say, it's not rocket science. It's mm-hmm. not heart surgery. Mm-hmm. It's a drink. And if you don't like it, we can take it, toss it, and make you a new one in 2 minutes. And that one is gone, you know? So it should always have a playful, fun aspect to it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm on the right path with how I think about this. And that was definitely 2017 when I was like, okay, yeah, I'm coming into my own.
Cool. And so at that point you're like, okay, now I feel more confident to start bringing the kitchen into the cocktails, because I mm-hmm. would suspect for you, that's a huge aspect of it, because you do have this culinary background.
So- yeah, absolutely. And so just also trying to find that marriage between the two and how to, mm-hmm. how to make it make sense. Right. Especially cause I live in Mississippi. So a lot of things that I want to bring in and use are foreign or we can't find here. You know, there are a lot of Amari that we can't get. So you have to find a way to.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are the challenges for you in Mississippi? I know every state has their own rules, import and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So what are some wish lists for you that you have going at this time?
Oh, I would love for Mississippi to get Sue's. We don't have Sue's in Mississippi.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So what's your alternative to that?
Well, we just like.
Nothing?
Nothing really. I mean, you try to use Campari, but Campari is like.
It's a little
it's different.
Too bitter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there's just too many like things like that. And then you try to like dilute it down and see, try to like make it not bitter. Mm-hmm. So you add sweetness, but then the cocktail has like that weird sweet bitter aspect. It's not like a natural flavor. Mm-hmm. So things like that with Sue's isn't here. There are a ton of Amari that we can't get. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of things like that. So the way this state works in Mississippi, it's a state control liquor system. So the mm-hmm. state runs it. And in order for you to get it, you have to have at least $1,000 worth of sales for them to post it on the list to buy.
Oh, wow.
And if a distributor doesn't want to carry it, they won't post it. So Sue's is owned by Pernod Ricard, but Pernod Ricard's like, we don't want to have it in Mississippi, so we're not going to ever post it to be purchased. So things like that happen. Absinthe is terrible. It's like hard to get. There aren't any good absinthe here. So things like that most people post and see, and I'm like, oh, we don't get that because the state and distributors don't want to put in Mississippi. So
you must have such FOMO sometimes when you're looking at like other people's like Instagram's accounts, you know, around the country or the world. You're just like, but why?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I would love to have that in the mind on the back bar, but we can't.
So, you know, they say necessity is the mother of invention sometimes. You know, it's like I've learned that sometimes your best creative moments come out of restrictions like that. So for you, obviously you've got these restrictions. There's got to be some things that you're proud of that you've accomplished. Well, I guess having a James Beard nominated beverage program is one of those things. But I was thinking more in terms of like just the cocktails that you've come up with. Like you don't have a gentian, you know, liqueur for you. Mm-hmm. So how do you make up for that when you're just wanting, you know, things like that? What are some workarounds that you've come up with that you think are unique to Mississippi maybe?
Oh, so one thing about Mississippi is we have the best produce of almost any state in the country.
I live in California, so.
Yeah, no, I was like, no, California has a lot of great produce.
But and, I didn't know that about Mississippi. I had no idea. Oh, but yeah. I was thinking about it when I was reaching out to you. I'm like, oh, it's kind of brisk here in California today. I'm in Southern California. I'm like, but actually he's in Mississippi. And I was just in New Orleans for the last month. The weather there is like not bad right now.
Yeah.
Either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What kind of produce do you guys do out there? I have no idea.
So the Delta, Mississippi Delta is the most fertile land in the United States. Like you can grow anything there, which is why during slavery when cotton was king is because it was such fertile land. You could grow that. Mm. You can grow soy, corn, all of it was grown there because everything grows just so beautifully and in abundance there. And so like I talked to local farmers. There's a farmer's market like 100 yards from my house. I go every Tuesday and I see what local produce it is, what they have. We did a cocktail over the summer with rattlesnake green beans.
Ooh, yum.
just because, I mean, they were just like beautiful. Because
they were available. Green beans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you know, and I can get 2 pounds for $5 because it's a farmer's market. So I can get 10 pounds, you know, I get 10 pounds for like $10.
That's
and
awesome.
It's like homegrown. And when you put that in a cocktail, like it's so fresh. I'm like, dude, this guy's selling them down the street and they're just like really good green beans.
That's so awesome. Like that. I love that. I lived in the Bay Area for a long time. Since you had your French Laundry experience, you know, the Bay Area culinary scene and what it originated from. And I used to live just like a 10-minute walk from Chez Panisse. Right. And that's a place where, like, I remember being in college and being taken to lunch there by like my boss because it wasn't expensive. It was just kind of hard to get a reservation there. But I remember eating the food there and being like, oh, I understand now, because it wasn't fancy. It was just fresh and clean. And I just felt like I'd just eaten the healthiest thing ever. And it was all delicious. And both of my grandparents were farmers. So we have that. There is that difference when you can get it fresh like that. It's such a unique experience. And that's so cool that you can offer that to your patrons.
You know, yeah, absolutely.
What are some and other so like, great finds that you've had? I'm just dying. I'm just wanting to live vicariously through your farmer's market cocktails.
Oh, man. So, you know, summertime is always so beautiful here. We did we did a peach cocktail with this beautiful peach cordial. So there's a peach orchard 5 minutes from my house. And so we would buy the bushels of bushels of peaches. Even on the menu now, we have local apples from, so we try to keep all the produce about 60 to 70 miles of Oxford, you know, about an hour and a half drive.
And that's the Bar Muse menu currently. That's amazing. Yep. That's really incredible. Is the food like, wait, do you guys have food there at Bar Muse?
No.
Tell me about Bar Muse. Let me derail this wonderful food talk, but tell me about Bar Muse because you're an owner now. You are an owner of a bar, and that is a huge deal. And just tell me about your place, how it came to be and where it is and all that.
Bradley and Lindsay, who own the Lyric, where we work, they had renovated this little 300 square foot, like cocktail room. And they were like, Joe, come look at it and see what we can do with it. And I went over there and I looked and I was like, this definitely can be a cocktail bar. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know who wants to run it? I was like, I'll definitely run it. I can do it. And they're like, all right, cool. So I asked my business partner, Ross, we looked at it, got our finances together and opened up a little cocktail space. I mean, it's 264 square feet.
Amazing.
We see 26 people. So we found a little workaround to where we're actually able to not serve food with us being in conjunction with the Lyric. So that's been a really big boon to help.
Great.
It's just
yeah.
sort of drinks, yeah. And actually I have like a true cocktail bar. And we try to mix it everything locally driven in terms of produce. Even the liquors that we use, we try to use as many Mississippi made liquors. We have a really cool gin distillery about 15 minutes away from us called Wonderbird.
Oh my God, we use that's them. Awesome.
Yeah, awesome. We have Cathead. It's a vodka, gin, bourbon distillery about 2.5 hours away. We try to use them as much as we can on our menu. So places that, you know, that are popping up that are local and Mississippi made or Mississippi driven, we'll definitely try to use them.
That's
just been kind of the core of what, you know, the core of Bar Muse is like how to get local products on the menu and local ingredients. I think the fresher, the better.
Absolutely.
And it's been a lot of fun. It's been kind of, like I say, an embarrassment of riches. Mm-hmm. We've been open a little over 13 months. We opened October 13th of last year.
Yeah.
Esquire called us one of the best bars in America this year.
Nice. Oh my God. That's amazing. I did not know that. That's so cool. Oh God. Mm-hmm. That's so, you know, this is something where, I mean, I've always felt, and this is a common conversation amongst bar people, is that, the bar is that third space, right? You know, you have home, you have work, and then you have the other place. If you don't want to be at home or at work, where do you go? More often than not, it's a bar, you know, it's your local bar. Mm-hmm. But I think there's that thing about creating community. And I love everything that you're talking about right now is so community driven, you know, and that's, of course, you're getting noticed. That's amazing. You're just a total booster for your community as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what makes, a bar so special, right? Is like how it connects and how it connects to the community, right? And how it brings community together, especially in Mississippi.
I would think your patrons would have a sense of pride in that too, you know,
yeah, coming absolutely. In
and learning about, oh, this distillery is just over there. You know, this is made here mm-hmm. in Mississippi. That's incredible. Oh, that's so cool. I was in New Orleans for a month, I'm all, why didn't I get over to Mississippi? It's just an hour over, you know?
I know, right? But it's one of those things where like, you're also in New Orleans, like you spend month and you're like, I only hit half the restaurants I wanted to. Dang
that
it, you know?
That is true. That is true. But at the same time, yeah, maybe I need to be there 2 months next time. They know what's up with me. I'm known for terrorize. Got 12 on my back. I swear to God, I really don't call here about it. Them bodies, and I swear I keep it brief. I cannot talk about it. But only thing I do is pop my shit. That's how I talk about it. I really don't know nobody like my gang. We really bad. Niggas step up to the plate. I show you we can say about it. You know you niggas don't want to be dead. Pull up in the all black Impala 4D. Me and my dog creep. We got one finna put his head to sleep. I don't think he see me coming when I'm dumping. Hit him crawl the street. You know we get the stomping, get the running. Who that at the street? The street sweeper. That 223. That bitch gon' hit him from his head 10 feet. That pussy nigga thought I wanted them other niggas. Nah, I ain't sweet. They must ain't told you. Bitch, I'm a gangster. Yes, sir. I am from the streets. I don't have a problem with none of my enemies. They know what's up with me. I have to ask, and this leads into the other part of what this podcast is about, is the playlist that you have at Bar Muse. How is that mood set for you guys? What kind of music do you guys listen to?
Oh man. So we are a big hip hop, hip hop theme bar. Yeah. We listen to a lot of hip hop. I think hip hop is like the best music for a bar because you can turn it down, but people can still feel the bass and like the energy from hip hop is always there. Mm-hmm. You may not agree with all the lyrics, but the energy that hip hop provides in a space like that, you're like, okay, I like, it gives it a really cool vibe. And I think as hip hop becomes more and more mainstream, it's not really like faux pas to hear these things. And you're like, they said that in music and it's like, it's hip hop. It's like now it's commonplace, right? Because the younger generation is like, we grew up with this music. It's not like it's this. You
know, that's why you're saying more and more mainstream. I'm like, hip hop is pop now. I mean, it's been the top of the charts for like a couple decades at this point. So like you said, growing up with it, you know, it really busted out late 80s, early 90s. And there's that kind of golden age then. But at the same time, it's done nothing but grow. So nothing but larger. So who works on the playlist? Do you have any hand in that?
Oh, so I do. And I'll also let the bartenders choose. Like, guys, if it's your shift, play what makes you happy. You know, play with something that how you're feeling that day, you know, because all our bar staff is eclectic and from all walks of life. So we'll collab and get a playlist going and then we'll change it up. We might hit them with, you know, we listen to a lot of Young Nudie. He's a rapper out of Atlanta.
Cool.
Yeah. Like I love Southern hip hop. One of our bartenders, Tarek, he's from DC. So he loves, you know, East Coast rap. Mm-hmm. He's big into Nas, Jay-Z, you know what I'm saying, things like that. So it always is a really cool mix. Kendrick Lamar is always in our playlist. I mean, he's just,
He's kind of a given right everywhere.
He's just killing it. So
what is your playlist then when it's your turn and you're in there? Ooh, working? Man. What do you want to hear in the background?
I've been listening to a lot of Joey Badass right now. He's been playing him heavy rotation. I love Young Thug, Migos. You know, I love something like, Outkast is, I mean, you can't have a Southern playlist without Outkast.
Yeah, I know, right?
That is like, they're like the kings of Southern hip hop, right? We even go to some Chopped and Screwed for Houston. My mom's from Oklahoma, so she drives down to, you know, Dallas and Houston all the time. So a little Chopped and Screwed, because people don't understand UGK. I mean, like, come on, Bumby Pimp C. Oh, man.
I had a girl that I talked to on this podcast who was from Houston, and she said, I was a Chopped and Screwed goth. And I'm like, how does that even work? And she's like, Houston, man. She's like, you can have it all in Houston. I was like, oh my God. But that's amazing. So I'm sure that keeps that vibe going. But you know, it's not the vibe I would suspect for like a small intimate cocktail bar, but you know your community. So you know who's coming in there and you know what they want.
Yeah. Absolutely. And also we also sneak a lot of I love hardcore hip hop, but also love pop music. Like I play a bunch of Harry Styles, Katy Perry. I love pop music. It's just like, and also I love a lot of K-pop too. So I'll get on there like, oh, Joe's playing music. Well, I was like, it's K-pop. And it's like, it's so good though. Like it's such good music.
Well, it sounds like you just like upbeat. Like everything you're talking about is just up. Everything is just, you know, it's, you're going to walk in and it's going to have that, a positive vibe, regardless of what they're saying, just because the beats are up and, you know, the music is like lively and everything. And so it just sounds like when people walk in, they're forced to be in a good mood.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Well, what was your first concert? Do you remember? You've got
I was actually in Oklahoma visiting my grandmother. I was like 10 and we went to a Mystical concert because my older cousin was a dancer. So she got free tickets to like the show because her dance team won this competition. So they got tickets to Mystical. That was my first concert.
Was that in a big venue?
No, it was like this outdoor venue. Man, it was like an outdoor venue in Oklahoma City. It wasn't like this crazy big thing, you know? It was like,
I was going to say it was Mystical. And I can't imagine him playing like in a big stadium, but I could see him playing in a club. And I'm like, if you're 10 years old, he couldn't have been playing in a club. That must have been really fun, though. Did everyone shake their ass? That's what I got to know. There had to be a lot of shaking.
It was just like, this is like, you know, that's when you're like, oh, I'm 10. You're like, this is what hip hop is. I'm like, this is what, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're like, this is so cool, you know?
That's awesome. That was my first concert. Well, where did you go after that then, since that opened up your eyes and you were just like, oh, now I get it. So who were your favorites when you were growing up?
Ooh, man, growing up, music. It's funny, my musical taste has evolved, I think. I think it's part of life.
Life and life experiences and
Hip hop has always been a mainstay, but I love, like I said, Earth, Wind & Fire. We bartended a wedding this past weekend and like Earth, Wind & Fire is like on every wedding playlist and no one's upset. It's like, okay, yeah, it makes sense. It's always a good grooving music, no matter what. No one's like, man, turn them off. You're like, okay, I can listen to Earth, Wind & Fire right now. It's always like, it's playable. Replayability is awesome. Curtis Mayfield, I think, is like, has influenced so much in terms of hip hop and just like music in general.
Curtis Mayfield is really an interesting one to talk about, just as everything that he's done. You know, he was gospel and then also just black culture and continue moving through, and all of it sounded, his voice is just heavenly, you know, at all times. So good. Well, it sounds like when you started learning that, you were, if you think about it, you're still learning about like the core of hip hop in a way. It was like, these are the foundations of music and like seeing what it's been turned into, you know, as you grew up.
Yeah. I mean, also like the samples and things, you know, you forget where this music came from and you're like, that's a really cool sample. You listen to the song and you're like, oh my gosh, that makes so much more sense. Like the sample that he took from it, or, you know, or the beat that he, you know, he borrowed, things like that. I love seeing like how someone takes a beat and you're like, wait a minute, sounds like, oh my gosh, that's, you know, that's Temptations. That's so great. Like how they layered and changed it and manipulated. That's so cool.
That was like the, when Beyonce first came out with Crazy in Love, that sample in that is a Chilite song. And I didn't remember that. I knew some Chilites, but not that song. And it was still a big song. I just didn't know that song. And so then when it was pointed out to me, it's like, oh, it's Chilites. It's Am I Your Woman? I think it's the name of the song. And you listen to it. And it's basically lifted from this. I mean, it's undeniably, you listen to that song next to Beyonce and you're like, well, Beyonce just sang differently on top of that, you know, in a sense, it's just crossing. But it was like, well, thank you for bringing that back into the consciousness, because now the Chilites are getting more attention than they were getting at that time. And who can argue with that, you know?
Right.
That's awesome. So you were able to take that. And have you, oh, I've noticed when I've looked in my research on you, I've noticed that you've had some kind of themed cocktail lists and stuff. I saw like a Casablanca themed one, I think you did once, and maybe more movie. Have you ever had the opportunity to do a music one? Have you had music cocktails in your world?
We have not. That's actually, we're thinking of our next theme for the winter. Our winter menu is probably going to be something like that. Some kind of like musical theme. The themes just help us know when people ask, like, I had a drink here last October and we're like, okay, oh, this theme. And it just helps us keep things in straight? Order because yeah.
That's very smart. So now you have to have like winter songs or something. And
mm-hmm. And I think the menu reads better when it's all one theme. Because then people are like, oh, I want to try this one because it's after so-and-so, and I want to try this one after that. And it's kind of fun and cool to have people like drink them after like, you know, after having it themed. I think it's also just fun and kind of makes it a little more playful and more inviting. Because some of the ingredients, you're like, what are these ingredients? But I know it's, you know, crazy in love. Like, I want that one because after Beyonce. So, you know, it's
like, I'm just helping them along, you know? Well, that's great because if it's helping them be a little more daring, you know, I think that's that's a really good way to look at it. I thought also that's probably helpful when you're naming things to have a theme to work with, because sometimes naming can be the toughest part of it all.
Man, that's the truth. Jeez.
You're like, what are we going to call it? I don't know. But if he's like, it's got to be something from Willy Wonka, you know, something from there, then you're like, well, it's purple, so it'll be this. So yeah, no, naming is the worst. Well, I love that. I think that's really cool of you to do. You own a bar now, what do you see in your future, like in this industry? What do you want to go forward and do?
I think now it's about education, right? Now that I've amassed a wealth of knowledge, it's time to share that knowledge with other people. I love teaching classes and courses on alcohol because I want to make, you know, people more an informed consumer. I think it makes every bar better if they know what's going into the drinks and how to properly make a drink at home and how to entertain guests and people and things like that. I think education is something that I would love to do, is more education into bar sustainability, especially bar sustainability.
I was going to ask you about that before, because it sounded like you're inadvertently practicing sustainability just because you are so locally focused, which is great. And we need more of that all around the world, obviously. So yeah, that's cool that you have that in mind too, education and sustainability and keeping those things together, you know, showing people how to work with what they got.
Absolutely. And I think it also just helps, for me, it's also like, I think about the pandemic, right? The pandemic was hard on everyone. And so I think about like the human capital, like what it takes to actually make these drinks. How do the people who are making these drinks feel, right? I think we oftentimes in hospitality industry think about the guest, but it's like, man, the person serving the guest isn't happy. It shows, right? And when they're burnt out, it just trickles down the line to where it's like, oh, the service, the food was good, but, and never want to hear that, but where it's like, oh, it was good, but and it's like, oh, the server's working, you know, three back-to-back doubles, isn't sleeping very well. I mean, the industry's already hard. You're standing up, you know what I'm saying? It's fast paced. It's a lot of memorization.
Your body gets trashed after all that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so like, how do we do sustainability in terms of the people who work in restaurants, you know, cause it also, it's a restaurant. It, by its nature, isn't a money-making entity unless you've done it for 15, 20 years, right? Yeah. And at that point, hopefully you have some kind of equity in something so you're not working those 80 hours a week again and things like that. So it's like, how do you find that balance, right? And even things like healthcare. I think if more hospitality people had healthcare, it would do dividends for the industry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the fact that you let your team choose their playlist is something pretty huge, because that helps the mood of the, you know, if there's something that the bartender, I agree with you in like, in this sort of like, not necessarily the customer is always right thing, because they're not, but I think that you have to make sure that your staff is happy too. If you're in there and you've got a playlist going that the staff likes and the customer also likes, great. If the staff likes it and the customer's okay with it, guess what? The staff likes it. And if it's not offensive, then everyone's going to come around. It's going to be okay. Yeah. But I think it's really important to keep that staff like, hey, you're here now. How can we make you comfortable? How can we make you happy here right now to the best of our ability? And yeah, the industry, I mean, I think the pandemic really did put a highlight on what bare bones, you know, we have to keeping this industry going and everything. And it's not like those in the industry didn't already know it. It just kind of alerted the rest of the world to the fact that these are the margins that we operate on, so that you can have a nice meal and a nice cocktail. So maybe y'all should be nicer to us.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, during the pandemic, we're like, I can't wait to go to my favorite restaurant. Then they get in there. It's like, why are you acting like you've never been in a restaurant, man? Please give us a break. Dude, what happened? You were just at home for 6 months. This is what you just had to do when you come to the bar?
And you forgot? Did you forget how to do this? Well, the other thing that I found interesting is it's a combination of that, but also the flip side of that are the people who went home during the pandemic and then started making cocktails for themselves, right? They bought a book and they started buying the ingredients because the liquor stores were selling like crazy. And they tried to make those drinks. And then they were just like, I really can't wait for the bar to open again so someone else can make this drink for me.
Yep.
Because this mm-hmm. is like hard, you know, this is hard. And there is that, absolutely. There are those who came out with the appreciation of cocktails. And then the people that you're talking about who came in and just acted like fools.
Oh, yeah. My sister-in-law is a teacher. Oh, yeah. So she's a teacher. And during the pandemic, you know, she was like, I got the most gifts from parents because they're like, oh, my gosh, I've been at home with my, you know, with my child. This is so hard. And it's like, yeah, like my kid is kind of an asshole. It's like, yeah, we've been telling you that. Right? We weren't lying about this. You know, it's like, of course. And I have 35 other kids just like this.
That are all yeah. little assholes. Yeah, yep. Totally. Uh-huh. But now the question is, now that those kids are back in school, is she still getting the presents, or are those, do those parents go back to being like, why didn't my kid get an A?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they backslid where they're just like, well, it wasn't, clearly it wasn't us. It must be the teacher. It's like, what? How does that work?
Yeah. So that's kind of the, like you're saying, I definitely have seen that more on the restaurant side than on the bar side here and where I am anyway. I've definitely seen more misbehavior in the restaurants. And maybe it just depends on the bar too. Like at I own a bar too, and our bar people have been pretty good for the most part, you know, since everything opened back up. I mean, during that pandemic time when we had to police people and put on your mask if you're going in to use the bathroom, that was really hard. That was really, really hard. But mm-hmm. I think, you know, things are balancing out now. We don't have the luxury that you have, though, of getting fresh peas for our summertime drinks. So that could have made a big difference. Well, that's amazing. I think on that note, it's probably a good place to wrap it all up. I just loved hearing from you and hearing about how it's going. You know, it sounds like you've really been able to do a wonderful thing for your community and for yourself too, for sure. So congratulations on Bar Muse and surviving.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I don't know if you want to give people like website, Instagram, that kind of stuff for yourself, for the bar, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. So the bar Instagram is Bar Muse Oxford. We also have a little lunch cafe called Good Day Cafe. You can follow both of those on Instagram and Facebook. My personal Instagram is Uncle Mom 31.
Uncle Mom?
Uncle Mom. So I'm one of six kids. And all my siblings have children. I think I have like 10 nieces and nephews. Mm. And so when I used to pick them up from school, I used to dress like a big Moomoo, like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
So you're the fun uncle for sure.
And so I would pick them up and I would sign Uncle Mom, and they'd be like, you know, they're like, who is this guy in this big muumuu? And my niece and nephew was like, oh my God, please stop coming to school like this. This is so embarrassing. It is lunchtime and you're in a muumuu. Stop it. You know, they're in like second, third grade, and they're like, Uncle Joe. I'm like, I'm your Uncle Mom. And they're like, just stop it. Please don't come to school anymore. Don't come into town. Don't come see me at school. Don't come see me. So that's where I got Uncle Mom from. They would just hate it. They're like, oh my gosh, Mom, don't let Joe come to school anymore.
Well, okay. So when you do start your, it's your Instagram again is Uncle Mom 1?
31.
Okay. So when you do start your education classes, you know, when you start teaching those, whatever it is, the big seminars, doing all this stuff, you have to call it Uncle Mom Productions.
All right.
That's gotta be like from here on out, anything Uncle Mom PR, Uncle Mom Productions, whole thing. That is so beautiful. I love that. I always, those nieces and nephews at some point are going to be like, okay, I guess it's cool now. Well, thank you. Don't go away, but thank you so much for talking to me. It was really wonderful to meet you on
the
Zoom.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Next time I'm in the Zoom. Yeah.
Can you feel it? I used to feel so devastated. At times I thought we'd never make it. But now we on our way to greatness. And all that ever took was patience. I used to feel so devastated. At times I thought we'd never make it. But now we on our way to greatness. And all that ever took was patience.
All right, so the next time you find yourself passing through Oxford, Mississippi, make sure you check out Bar Muse, and that would be Bar Muse _Oxford on the Instagram. And go say hi to Joe Stinchcomb. He's on Instagram too, UncleMom31. Please, I cannot wait to see Uncle Mom Productions in full force taking over the country. Thank you, Joe, so much for talking with me about your bar and about your journey and about your musical loves. And the rest of you, there is a playlist that he created for us. It's over on Spotify, on the Mo Herms Spotify page. So thank you so much, and can't wait to hear more about what's happening at Bar Muse. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.